Hello and welcome to the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Arrowhead Addict and Blog Talk Radio. I'm your host, Joshua Briscoe. Thanks for joining me today. On this show, we're going to talk about the latest news and notes surrounding the Kansas City Chiefs. First and foremost, the future of Eric Berry. By the time you're listening to this show, you might have known what the Chiefs have done with Eric Berry's contract, his franchise tag, signing him or not. I'll be telling you what the Chiefs should be doing or should have done, depending on when you listen to the show. Talk a little bit about Mark Sanchez versus Alex Smith, because that's a serious conversation that serious people are having. Plus, we'll look at paying quarterbacks in light of Andrew Luck's giant deal with the Colts. Look at the impact that has on a team. Plus, there's a lineman who may be poised for a jump in 2016 that I've been pretty hard on this offseason, pointed out to me by a listener. And then I'll take some listener questions in addition to that. But again, first and foremost, the story of last year, the comeback player of the year in the NFL, was Eric Berry. However, I think the Chiefs are being appropriately stingy with the contract offers they're giving the Chiefs' safety. We need to talk about Eric Berry. Eric Berry is rightfully one of the most popular players, not just on the Chiefs, but in Kansas City. His story last year was phenomenal, truly like top-of-the-line sports story, even transcending sports. None of that is even up for debate. Eric Berry as a person, as a member of the community, as a member of the locker room, I understand the stated importance that he has in all of those areas. However, the Kansas City Chiefs are a franchise in a sport with a salary cap. And one thing that I really admire about the Chiefs fan base and you listeners of this show is through the last couple of years that I've done this show, I've learned a lot about how the NFL works in the cap, and I think you have also, to the point where we can have, generally, we can have intelligent, meaningful, level-headed conversations about how the Chiefs spend their money. And this isn't like the Royals to me. I'm going to use a couple baseball analogies here today. So if you're a Chiefs fan, not a Royals fan, I'll try to explain where I'm going with this. But I promise it's not going to be a baseball show. So just buckle in for 1 second. It's not like the Royals where if you're a fan of the Royals, I'm not sure you should care where David Glass, the owner's money, should go. It's not a capped league. What the Royals spend their money on is frankly none of your business in the way where you shouldn't care. You shouldn't worry about it. It's simply a gamble on the ownership. You should care when it affects your team negatively. If they spend a bunch of money on a pitcher, in this case I'll say Ian Kennedy, the guy they just spent a bunch of money on who's given up a bunch of home runs lately. If that keeps the team from going to get better starting pitching, then you should care. But that's not your fault. That's the ownership, and they're not being limited by a cap. That's just how much David Glass wants to spend. In the case of the NFL, that is not how it works. The NFL has a hard cap. It's not the NBA with a luxury tax, and it's not Major League Baseball with no cap at all. In the NFL, you've got a cap to stay under. Right now, I can tell you that according to OverTheCap.com, Ben Grubbs has a $5.2 million cap number this season, and he's not on the Chiefs roster. Now, we can look back, and I can say I was a fan of trading for Ben Grubbs, and I was a fan of the signing, and so were the Chiefs, and we were both wrong. And I care about that, because that's $5.2 million the Chiefs cannot spend on an active player. Tom Bahali technically has dead money from his contract while also still being paid quite a bit in the active roster. Paul Fanica is getting paid over $1 million this year. He's not on the team. This stuff matters, and we care about it, and we're learning about it, because it directly affects the team. Swinging and missing on Ben Grubbs is not just $5 million out of the Hunt family pocketbook. It's $5 million out of Clark Hunt's hands and out of the pool of money that the Chiefs are allowed to spend. In baseball, you're allowed to spend as much as you want. In football, it's not the case. So we do need to care about the salary cap. It's part of being an intelligent NFL fan in 2016. This comes now to Eric Berry. Eric Berry right now is on the Chiefs cap for $10.8 million, he's the franchise tag player right now for the Chiefs as of the recording of this show late on July 9th. That matters. The Chiefs are currently in contract negotiations with him right now, and I'm not the most concerned with this year's cap number, although it is bad. The Chiefs have the least cap money in the NFL at the time of recording this show. That's not my greatest concern, though. My greatest concern is, what does this look like next year, 6 years from now? Are the Chiefs still paying Eric Berry if they give him some sort of monster extension? First, let's look at what Eric Berry wants to be paid. Pro Football Focus sings his praises. I think Pro Football Focus had Eric Berry as the best safety in the league last year. Right now, Jarius Byrd, according to SpotTrack.com, is the highest paid safety in football at $10.9 million. Eric Berry with a franchise tag is second at $10.8. Next, Earl Thomas, $9.9. Rashad Jones in Miami, $8.2. Rounding out the top five, Devin McCourty, $7.9 million in New England. There is no question that Eric Berry wants to be paid as a top five safety in the NFL. The Chiefs, judging by how little the contract negotiations have moved, story came out today that Eric Berry said he's a little surprised there hasn't been more movement in the contract talks. Eric Berry wants to be paid as a top five safety, probably a top three safety, very likely the highest paid safety in football. The Chiefs obviously don't want to give it to him. Now, if you've been listening to the show for a while, you know that I would have given the franchise tag to Sean Smith, kept him here for 1 year, paid him what it would have taken, let Eric Berry walk, and then bring back some of those depth guys and invest in the safety position, maybe in the draft as well. Instead, the Chiefs invested heavily through the draft in the corner, in corner positions, and moved a couple of later round pick guys to safety. Now, Jamel Fleming, to safety. They've addressed their defensive backs, but I would not have franchise tagged Eric Berry. I don't think he's worth $10.8 million this year. Scarier, though, is that Eric Berry is going to be wanting in the neighborhood of $10 million per year for the duration of his contract. Jarius Byrd, for the comparison, currently the highest paid safety in the NFL, he's 29 years old. Eric Berry, after being a part of the Chiefs now, you know, as an established member of this team, is 27. He's got 2 years less of than Jarius Byrd, less wear and tear on his body. Jarius Byrd signed a 6-year, $54 million contract with the Saints, $11 million guaranteed, $11 million signing bonus, an average of 9 per year, $26 million guaranteed. Now, in that setup, the cap hits for Jarius Byrd play out pretty well for the Saints after looking at it now, after four years of this deal, it starts to be cuttable for the Saints without giant cap repercussions. Eric Berry is going to be in that exact same zone for his next contract, and the contract that he wants right now. Eric Berry, for all of the great things I've said for him, about him as a member of whatever, all of the intangible things for Eric Berry are truly undeniable. You cannot deny it. Eric Berry, as a football player and his importance for this Chiefs team, is overrated. And I don't say that with any pleasure. I'm not glad about that fact, and I hope I don't sound like I am. It worries me. And what the Chiefs are going to pay him worries me. I think as of right now that they will work out a long-term deal with him. Eventually, the two sides will collide in their game of chicken, and both of them will bend a little farther than they wanted to. I don't want to see a 6-year, $65 million deal for Eric Berry where you're guaranteeing $30 million, and essentially that is being that cap hit is prorated over the course of the deal. So if Eric Berry is getting giant money for 3 years, and then the Chiefs can cut him in year four and still continue to pay him too much dead money the years after that for a while, that's how I see it's playing out right now. It's eventually the salary for Eric Berry becomes too gigantic, and the Chiefs move on, but still have to pay him more of that guaranteed money over the course of, say, a 6-year deal. Now let me explain as concisely as I can the problem with Eric Berry. Look back to what happened when the Chiefs did and did not have Derek Johnson. The highlight reel for Eric Berry is him playing essentially deep linebacker. Stick with me here. That's what he was drafted for. He is one of the best safeties in the league at coming up and stopping the run. That is not the primary role of a safety in the NFL right now. In the NFL, where Jerome Bettis was the most important player in the Super Bowl, then you have to have a safety that can come up and fill that gap. Whenever Derek Johnson was out for the Kansas City Chiefs, you would see those highlight reel plays from Eric Berry because he would be 7 yards back, and come up and fill a hole and stop a running back after a gain of 3 or 4 yards. And you go, wow, look at Eric Berry cutting that from a gain of 12 to a gain of 4. He came up and filled that gap like he's playing deep linebacker. He's very good at that. He's not great at it. He's very good at it. He's in the top third of the league of starting safeties at doing that specific thing, at playing deep linebacker. Look back to last year. Tell me how many times you heard Eric Berry or remember seeing Eric Berry come up and fill a gap and go, oh man, what a great play. I have very few of those memories because I remember Derek Johnson doing that because he was active and on the field last year. And when Derek Johnson does it, though, because where he's starting actually playing inside linebacker and not playing as a deep linebacker, which is Eric Berry's safety position, he's stopping guys at the line of scrimmage because he's just starting 3 yards closer than Eric Berry is. So Eric Berry stopping the running back after a gain of 4 is less valuable than Derek Johnson doing it at the line of scrimmage. Derek Johnson, his strength, his force, what he does so well is plug up the middle immediately. And he's been doing that for the duration of his career, and he's going to do it until his knee stop. He's going to do it until he physically can't play anymore. That is the thing that he is most skilled at, and as long as he can physically keep doing it, I do not see him failing. And when he does begin to fail there, the teacher is going to put another guy in the middle to do it. You don't want your safeties to be making the majority of your tackles. They start farther back on the field. It's super simple, but I think we get lost in it because we see Eric Berry make these great tackles, these great defensive plays. Think back to the Patriots game. Whenever Eric Berry lined up across from Rob Gronkowski, and everybody except for Bob Sutton and Andy Reid went, oh God, Eric Berry can't do that. If not Sean Smith on Rob Gronkowski, give Marcus Peters a shot. Don't let Eric Berry cover, oh God, touchdown. Eric Berry's not a good cover safety. That's just not what he does. Eric Berry is not only not the most important player on the defense, he's not the best safety on the team. He's not the most important safety on the team. It's Ron Parker. What Ron Parker did on this defense last year, I've said over and over, I think he might be the MVP of this defense last year. What he did last year at safety, he improved significantly at stopping the run, but he was a fantastic coverage safety. And whenever he had to come up and play the slot, which he did all the time, cover the slot because Phillip Gaines went down with his injury early on in the year, he was nearly a shutdown slot cover guy. Last we saw of Ron Parker a couple years prior was him being terrible at being an outside corner. That's why I have hope for Jamel Fleming this year. Ron Parker did amazing things with the Chiefs last year. Eric Berry does one thing well, and that one thing isn't that valuable and isn't that hard to replace. Eric Berry is mediocre at best at being a coverage safety. He cannot cover guys man-to-man. He cannot keep up with the best tight ends in football. He's a matchup liability whenever he's lined up from not just Rob Gronkowski, because everyone's a matchup liability, but whenever he lines up across any big physical tight end, any quick, fast tight end, it is not hard for that guy to beat Eric Berry, and it hasn't been for his entire career. You can think back, and I have nightmares of Antonio Gates slashing a young Eric Berry. Now I have them of Rob Gronkowski doing it to a veteran Eric Berry. And we're going to see it again for years to come if the Chiefs give him a long-term contract. And what's going to happen, to go back to the Royals here, Eric Berry is going to be Alex Gordon if the Chiefs give him an Alex Gordon type of deal. Alex Gordon helped the Royals in a huge way, was a significant piece in giving the Royals the first World Series title since 1985. That was enormous last season. He's going to have a statue at Kauffman Stadium one day. But he was a free agent. And there are some questions, mostly support, but some questions about giving him a long-term deal. He struggled with injury. He's batted leadoff and been terrible. He's played poorly. He's certainly hit poorly this season for the Royals. Now people are starting to say, this contract already looks bad, and we've got years and years left. We're going to see, as Eric Berry breaks down, as Eric Berry slows down, we're going to see his flaws magnified, and his strengths are going to be lessened. And his strength right now, stopping the run after a 3-yard gain, is not that valuable and is not hard to replace. You can get a guy who does that thing much more cheaply. You can get a guy who is reckless, physical, aggressive, will gamble and win some and gamble and lose some. A guy who will stop a run after starting the play 10 yards in the back in the defensive backfield. You can find that guy anywhere. What's hard to find in the NFL is a guy who can do that and cover the tight end and step up and cover in the slot. Ron Parker is more of that than Eric Berry is. I don't want to see Eric Berry become Alex Gordon, where we go, oh man, everybody's thrilled about giving him that deal, and then we turn on him because he can't do what we thought he could do. That's going to be on us, and that's going to be on John Dorsey. We've seen Eric Berry for years now. We've seen what he can do well, what he does do well, and what he doesn't do well. And his weaknesses might be worth giving the franchise tag this year until the Chiefs can groom their younger guys to eventually take that spot next season. At this point, I would let that happen. I would say play out your franchise tag. If you prove something next year where your game grows, and it's not going to, then maybe we revisit it. But he's not going to suddenly become a shutdown cover guy. He's not going to be able to keep up with the best receivers and tight ends in the league whenever the ball's in the air. That's never been his game. He's not Ed Reed. He's not even Ron Parker. And again, there is no argument here that he hasn't proven himself as a person. And if you haven't seen this, I retweeted it a while ago at JB Briscoe on Twitter. He told a story about being pulled over at gunpoint by some police. And kind of in light of everything else going on right now in the world. And it's an incredible story. He tells it very well, and it's powerful. Eric Berry is one of two players whose jerseys I have. And I don't really buy jerseys anymore, but I will hold on to that Eric Berry jersey forever, probably. Because I think very highly of him as a person. I was very glad when the Chiefs drafted him. And he's played well for the Chiefs through his career so far. None of that is really up for debate. What has to be looked at critically here is, do you want to sign on with this guy for a very large contract going 6 years into the future? And the guaranteed money is important, and whenever this deal happens, which I think it will, I'll look at it all again and we'll break down the money and say, could the Chiefs have gotten a deal here? If the Chiefs want to give him $5 million a year, if you just gave him $5 million a year, I would sit down and be very happy to let Eric Berry continue to be the second safety in the Chiefs' defensive backfield. Have him and Ron Parker paired up would be spectacular. You would not hear me complain one iota about that. You know who's making $5 million in the safety market right now in the NFL? George Iloka. I don't know who he is. He plays for the Bengals. Ron Parker is getting $3.6 million, which is a hell of a deal. That contract was a little bit confusing at the time to a lot of us because, again, the last we had seen of Ron Parker before that contract was him sucking at being a corner. He has been superb. By the way, Tyvon Branch in Arizona is making $3.5 million this year. He's next on the list after Ron Parker. And I like Tyvon Branch, but he's not Ron Parker. Eric Berry is not going to be a value if the Chiefs give him a long-term deal. Wherever the Chiefs are, I hope they stand pat. I truly do. Because that's the most important thing in the NFL with a salary cap is getting good players at value. You might have to do that in the draft. Marcus Peters, stupendous value. Gambled early on Ron Parker, stupendous value. Justin Houston, gigantic contract. Find value because he is a difference maker. Jeremy Maclin, third on the Chiefs depth chart, on the Chiefs cap number. $12.4 million on the cap this year. Worth it. Game changer. Justin Houston, $19.1 million against the cap this year. Worth it. Game changer. Alex Smith, $17.8 million. Worth it. Game changer. Quarterback. Eric Fisher, $7 million. Questionable. Eric Berry, $10.8 right now. The biggest lie I think that we believe as Chiefs fans and have believed for a while is that Eric Berry is a transcendent defensive player, that he is a game changer. I think the world of Eric Berry. I don't want the Chiefs, and someone will. Eric Berry should not take a discount to stay here. He should find the money and take it. If the Titans want to give him $12 million a year after this season on the franchise tag, and that's where he ends up, man, he ought to be out of here in a second. because he is worth that, because that's what some team will pay him. He should take the money where he can get it. But because of his lack of versatility, the things that he's good at, are not the things that matter the most as a safety in the NFL. And I was going to say it's unfortunate. I don't know if it is. It's just the truth. It's just what Eric Berry is as a player. And it wouldn't be hard to unpack this for literally anyone else on this roster, because Eric Berry has been so spectacular off the field, we're overvaluing his contributions on it. And again, it's difficult to separate those things sometimes, but the Chiefs have to. The Chiefs absolutely must. That's how the NFL works. That's how teams win. I'm talking about the Broncos in a little bit. We talk about the Patriots all the time. Guys taking pay cuts, getting cut a year too soon instead of one contract too late. If the Chiefs let Sean Smith walk 1 year too soon, I would rather that happen than be one contract too late to realize that he's run out of gas. I don't even think Eric Berry is on a steep decline right now. But what he does well is not worth $9, $10, $11, $12 million a season for 6 years. It's not worth that in my estimation. It might be worth it to some other team. But for whatever it's worth, I hope the Chiefs stand pat and stay stingy on Eric Berry and make someone else pay him that money. And I hope Eric Berry gets it, and I won't enjoy seeing him play for another team. But if I was the one writing up the contract right now, I would not be budging off of the idea of saying $6 million a year, the guaranteed money that you want, the years that you want. But you cannot be the third highest cap hit, fourth highest cap hit on this team. Not whenever your most notable skill is extremely replaceable, stopping the run from the safety position. Send your angry tweets on Twitter at JB Briscoe. You can comment on the show on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show if you hate everything that I just said and you think that I'm a dope. I'm sure someone will. I feel like I just probably sounded really grouchy for 20 minutes, and I didn't mean to, but I'm worried about what's going to happen with Eric Berry. Let's see if I can get grouchier. This is a write-up about this story by Will Brinson on CBSSports.com. Jeff Legwald, Broncos reporter for ESPN.com, took a, quote, informal poll of 7 personnel executives, and 3 of them took Mark Sanchez over Alex Smith. I'm going to try to maybe make a case for why that isn't insane before backing up and going the other way around. Here's what Legwald wrote. Quote, the biggest reason? Most think Coach Gary Kubiak's offense will fit Sanchez and the Broncos are expected to run the ball well. Smith had always played low-risk football and limits interceptions, but the personnel executives want to see him make the throws he needs to make when the games are on the line. It's amazing to me that, by the way, all NFC executives, according to Jeff Legwald, which TJ Carpenter here in Kansas City asked him, it's amazing to me that those personnel executives sound like Twitter fans. Not fans of Twitter, but fans who don't actually watch the game and only tweet things. Or comment section trolls. Look at we'll take the last 3 years, and this is something on the CBS Sports article. They took the last 3 years of Alex Smith, and essentially the best 3 years, 2010 through 2012 of Mark Sanchez with the Jets, versus the last 3 years with Alex Smith and the Chiefs. Alex Smith has a 63.7% completion percentage, Mark Sanchez is 55.4%. Alex Smith thrown for over 3,300 yards, Mark Sanchez over 3,200. 20 touchdowns to 7 interceptions for Alex Smith, 19 to 16 for Mark Sanchez, and 7 yards per attempt for Alex Smith to 6.4 yards per attempt for Mark Sanchez. Those are the averages per season. Maybe I'm grouchy today, but this is absolutely beyond me. Not to mention that Alex Smith has been getting better within Andy Reid's system. If you think Mark Sanchez is going to do things in Gary Kubiak's system that Alex Smith can't do, won't do, hasn't done in Andy Reid's, you're delusional. It's just delusional. Now, I mean, I think in literally any facet of the game, I would take Alex Smith over Mark Sanchez. And not to mention the stats from last week about how incredibly good Alex Smith was while not being under pressure last season, and now that he has a real right tackle and the offensive line is coming together, it's only going to get better for Alex Smith. Keeping that in mind, Alex Smith is going to have his best season as a Chief this year. I feel very comfortable about saying that. Extremely comfortable. Mark Sanchez, at his best, barely held on to a really good defense and got the Jets in the playoffs. I mean, I understand the argument that Alex Smith doesn't win games for you. Mark Sanchez doesn't win games for you. And Mark Sanchez is a worse game manager. He's worse at throwing the ball down the field. He had a shorter yards per attempt average through those three seasons with the Jets. A lower completion percentage. He was worse at being Alex Smith. And Alex Smith was better at doing non-Alex Smith things. I don't... And maybe I'm preaching to the choir right now. I hope that us collectively as Chiefs fans are standing back and nodding going, yeah, man, that's insane. You can stop saying it's insane. But it blows my mind. And I don't know why any executive would go, well, you know, Gary Kubiak's system. Gary Kubiak had what felt like a solid 20 years of Matt Schaub, won exactly nothing, then went to Denver and won a Super Bowl because Peyton Manning said, I'm not running your system. In a vacuum, I think I would take Matt Schaub over Mark Sanchez. And Gary Kubiak didn't win anything with Matt Schaub. He has a better defense now than he had in Houston, which is great for the Broncos, I suppose. That does not make this hot take of saying Mark Sanchez over Alex Smith any less ridiculous. And in this article, this was based on a discussion about an AFC West Q&A ranking quarterbacks in the division, and the writer of this article, Will Brinson, said, you know, it's pretty easy to go 1-4, right? Rivers 1, Carr and Smith for 2 or 3, and then Sanchez last. I'm actually in, like, incredible disagreement with that. Philip Rivers is going the wrong direction. Derek Carr is going the right direction, but is the least established. Alex Smith has a ceiling, but is going in the right direction. Mark Sanchez is Mark freaking Sanchez. If I was going to draft quarterbacks in the AFC West, I would go Carr, Smith, Rivers, Sanchez. And maybe, again, I'm a dope, and you can tweet me about it. But that feels pretty clear-cut. And I might be undervaluing Philip Rivers based on a bad season last year where everyone on the Chargers was injured. But he is going the wrong direction right now. And I'm not even putting full-blown tears between those three guys. I'm putting tissue paper between Derek Carr to Alex Smith to Philip Rivers. Then I got a cinder block between Philip Rivers and Mark Sanchez. And Mark Sanchez can absolutely win with the Broncos. Do not miss that point, because this is important. The Broncos won the Super Bowl last year with some really horrific quarterback play. Peyton Manning was bad in the regular season. Bad. Brock Osweiler played quite poorly most of the time. And they won the Super Bowl, because their defense is spectacular. One of the best defenses I've seen since I've been paying attention to football closely. Maybe the best defense I've seen in that time span. Truly game-changing as a unit. If Justin Houston comes back, I'm not sure the Chiefs are very far from that. I think they have a deficiency at corner still that I feel better about as we get closer to the year. But still, that's my biggest fear. The Chiefs can hold up with anybody in the pass rush. I think they have I think they have the best defensive line in football. At least for a 3-4 defense. As much as I think Eric Berry is the second best safety in the group of safeties the Chiefs have, they have really good safeties. Because Ron Parker and Eric Berry make a nice tandem. I don't want to pay those guys collectively over $10 million, or by himself $10 million for Eric Berry. In case you missed that point earlier in the show. In case you just skipped to the 29-minute mark. I'm not convinced the Chiefs are far off from having a top 5, at least top 10 defense. And I'm not sure the Broncos shouldn't be the favorite in the AFC West. Overall, I think the Chiefs are the best team in the division. I am not discounting the Broncos. I am discounting Mark Sanchez for being Mark Sanchez. And that's not blind hatred because of a name and because of a butt fumble. It's because I've watched Mark Sanchez play. The best thing he can do in Denver is be a poor man's Matt Schaub. Like when Matt Schaub was good-ish. Knock him down a peg. And that's what Gary Kubiak is praying that Mark Sanchez is until they feel better about Paxton Lynch. Which is going to take some time. Because a lot of NFL teams were not sold on Paxton Lynch either. And if you're super concerned about Paxton Lynch taking over the AFC West, I would say don't. Because in a quarterback-starved league, there were, 30 teams who said, nah, pass for Paxton Lynch. Now, every team did that, including the Raiders, did that for Derek Carr. And they all look foolish right now. But that's something to keep you optimistic. I'm talking about quarterbacks in the division. I don't understand this at all. I feel like I'm being so grouchy today. If you feel like I'm being grouchy today, you can tweet me at JB Briscoe. And I'm leaving for vacation in 7 hours. So maybe whenever I get back from vacation in 2 weeks, I will be in a better mood. Sorry about that. Kind of. Not really. Let's talk more money. Just for a point of reference, Alex Smith right now has the 20th highest quarterback contract in the NFL. You think Alex Smith is better than the 20th best quarterback in the league? I certainly do. This deal looks better every time another quarterback signs a giant contract. In this case, we're talking about Andrew Luck. It's a 5-year extension, technically a 6-year deal, just north of $139 million, which is a record for NFL players. Before the day, the richest guarantees were $65 million given to Eli Manning and Philip Rivers. The Colts gave Andrew Luck $87 million in guaranteed money. Here is why, of course the Colts had to extend Andrew Luck. Because he's a very, 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 very good young quarterback. But, hear me out. Winning in the NFL is darn near impossible without a transcendent quarterback or a cheap one. The pressure on Andrew Luck just multiplied sevenfold. And he's already a very pressured quarterback because he's not working with what a lot of other quarterbacks are working with. And the Colts have so many holes that they no longer have the money to fill. And the front office has not done it well and has not done it cheaply so far in Andrew Luck's tenure and in Indianapolis. So I don't expect Andrew Luck to end up actually winning anything in Indy. Which is kind of a shame. Not a shame because screw the Colts. I'm still hurting, and Andrew Luck was the one who did it. Andrew Luck has a very good chance to become one of those transcendent quarterbacks, but I do wonder how far he alone can take this team. Huge holes in the defense, huge holes around him in the offense. If you tell me, hey, give me two guys on the Colts who are game changers, that's all I could give you, because it's Andrew Luck and T.Y. Hilton right now. Those are the two guys I can think of that are game changers. And that's going to be a huge challenge for those two guys to win a championship and drag along a bunch of average players all the way to the Super Bowl. I don't see it happening. At the same time, I'm not at all saying they shouldn't have extended Andrew Luck. I think the Colts are going to be very hard-pressed to win like that. More money news. Doug Baldwin signed a 4-year extension worth $46 million and including approximately $24.25 million guaranteed. He's now the 6th highest paid receiver in the NFL. He's 27 years old. Back when Jeremy Maclin was 27 years old, he was given 5 years, $55 million with $22.5 guaranteed through age 31. Very similar deals. One more year for Jeremy Maclin. A little less guaranteed money for one more year. I just think it's interesting to continually compare the rest of the NFL to what the Chiefs are spending, because Alex, as other guys are getting paid, the Jeremy Maclin deal, the Alex Smith deal are looking better and better as time goes on. So it's something to feel good about with John Dorsey. Before I get into a couple of questions here and talk about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif, I want to say thanks to the people who support this show via Patreon at patreon.com/RTK. That's patreon.com/RTK. Don Beal, Andy Simpson, Stephen Smith, Derek Vaughn, Ty DeClaire, Josh Beadle, and Jason Hessler. Don Beal's at DonBeal32 on Twitter. Derek Vaughn at D_Vaughn88. And Ty DeClaire at TyDeClaire44. Those people all support this show with their actual cash to help keep this show free, help keep this show coming out consistently. I know I'm going on vacation. Sorry about it. And to help keep this show rolling through the offseason, through the regular season. I appreciate that tremendously. So if you want to support the show that way with your own money, you can do it at patreon.com/RTK. Or if you want to help the show otherwise, you can follow me on Twitter at JB Briscoe. Like the show on Facebook at facebook.com/RTK show. And rate the show and leave a review on iTunes. Go to Roughing the Kicker on iTunes. All those things really do help the show. I appreciate your feedback and your questions very, very much. I've gotten some great feedback and some great questions the last few weeks. Hugely appreciative of those things. And I appreciate any way you see fit to help support the show. Simply sharing it on your own social media platforms or mentioning it to your Chiefs fan friends is one of my favorite things to see happen, because I know that you like the show enough to suggest it to other people who you think will enjoy it. Just continues to grow the listening audience, which is something that is very exciting for me, to get to share this show and to share this work with more and more people all the time. And if all you want to do is sit there and listen to the show and enjoy it, I'm super glad that you enjoy the show and continue to listen, hopefully, you know, consistently, and that you enjoy it enough to stick around for the regular season. I really appreciate simply seeing that you, as a member of Chiefs Kingdom, are coming back to this show for your Chiefs fix during the offseason. It makes the time that it takes to build these shows completely worth it. I've been a little critical about Laurent Duvernay-Tardif during this offseason, and it's because I don't see a jump coming from him. I see him being I understand he's a smart guy. I understand he's got great physical tools. What I've seen from him on the field has been lacking to me. And I've generally been pretty critical of him as a player and what I expect from him or don't expect from him going forward. Derek Vaughn, one of the Patreon supporters at D_Vaughn88, tweeted me a question that is one of the most challenging questions I've gotten so far this season that has made me reconsider a little bit. And I worked on a response to it here, but I'm not sure. It shook me a little bit on my LDT perspective. Derek asked, "Would you take a moment to explain why you don't see the same year 3 jump out of LDT as you did with Eric Fisher? I'm on the side of the fence, which sees a nice jump. Third year Adam McGill, third year at this talent level, I'm excited about LDT. I was big on the third year jump for Eric Fisher bandwagon. I'm not there for LDT, me personally now speaking. Hello, thanks for listening." Why is that? It's a fair question. First, I'm gonna rewind to January 2015. It was when I first latched on to Eric Fisher's going to have a big jump when the season begins. This is what I wrote at the time. After Tyron Smith's second season at first year at left tackle, this is how Pro Football Focus described the Cowboys' offensive line. "The Cowboys have put some money into their line recently, but the return wasn't there in 2012. Tyron Smith had an at times awkward first year at left tackle. After Fisher's second year and first year at left tackle, you could replace Tyron Smith and Eric Fisher, the difference being the Chiefs put no money into their line. The year 3/year 2 at left tackle was a big measuring stick for Tyron Smith, and I was saying at the time it would be a big measuring stick for Fisher. But now Fisher has good guard play beside him. That time I thought it would be Ben Grubbs. It did not end up being Ben Grubbs. I thought we would see a nice improvement because of that." And the Chiefs had not put that kind of money into their offensive line back in 2012, 2013. And now I'm reassessing this with LDT. Now, back with Eric Fisher, part of my assessment on Fisher was because Tyron Smith's career path seemed to be about a year ahead of Fisher's, and frankly, guards are harder to judge. But with Eric Fisher, it was because there was a pattern there to follow. Tyron Smith showed a pattern that Eric Fisher stepped into exactly. And with that, it made it easy for me to put those pieces together and say, this is what's going to happen. And again, there's not a pattern like that, an obvious pattern like that for LDT. He's simply a guy playing the same position for his third season. And I hope that shows a jump. Really, with Eric Fisher, it was mostly a second-year jump of playing left tackle, also the third year being in the league, which LDT only has one of those advantages. However, as I thought about this more, and again, thank you, Derek, for the question. As I thought about this more, whoever plays right guard is going to look pretty good beside Mitchell Schwartz, because Mitchell Schwartz is going to take care of the outside on the right side of the line. You're never going to have him slide his guy to the middle whenever he's not supposed to, and have the right guard suddenly have his hands full. Mitchell Schwartz is going to take care of his business. So if a Chiefs guard is going to take a big jump in 2016, LDT being the guy at right guard is probably the best bet. I know that he's smart and very athletic. I'm still skeptical because of the limited growth that I've seen. But the thing that I hadn't counted on and should have talked about last week and simply did not consider is that Mitchell Schwartz is going to make that guy next to him look better than he is and is going to challenge that guy and push that guy and help that guy with his assignments and help keep LDT's face clean. So, Derek, that question and looking back into it has changed my perspective a little bit on Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. I still, with what I've seen from him as a player, I don't see the bursts that I've seen from, that I saw from Eric Fisher after his two seasons. I don't see the ceiling that I saw with Eric Fisher. I don't see the highlights that I saw from Eric Fisher. I saw Eric Fisher do things his first two seasons and in the preseason before last year. I saw Eric Fisher do things where I said, if that guy who made that play sticks around, he's going to be a good left tackle in the NFL. And that guy stuck around. I haven't seen that from Laurent Duvernay-Tardif. I haven't seen a few grand highlights where I've seen, all right, that's the real LDT. If we can keep him out of his shell, he's gonna hold on that right guard spot. I don't have that experience yet. But as far as the guys around him, with the second year of Mitch Morse at center, between Morse and Schwartz, in the middle of a Mitch sandwich, LDT is in the perfect spot in this offensive line to take a nice step forward in 2016. That's going to do it for this show because it became very long-winded very quickly. I got too into my feelings about paying Eric Berry. I hope you enjoyed this show. This has been the Roughing the Kicker Chiefs podcast on Blog Talk Radio and Arrowhead Addict Radio. If you send in questions and I tell you on Twitter, at JB Briscoe, that I'm going to use them and I'm writing them down, I am. I have three questions just from Kashan at ChiefPriest_25 on Twitter that I will be using in future episodes very soon whenever I need more show for this offseason. So your questions are living water to me. I'm super grateful for them, and I will be getting to them very soon. Now, within the next 2 weeks or so, maybe I'll do a special episode if Eric Berry's contract does in fact happen. Otherwise, I'm off for a little bit here, heading out to the beach. I feel like this was kind of a weird show. I'd like to know if you liked it or didn't care for it or have any feelings at all. Sometimes, I guess, weird stuff just happens when you're talking about the Chiefs in early July. But I love it. I hope you love it, too. As always, thank you for listening. This is Ruffin the Kicker. Excuse me, sir. Bye, Mom. Could you drop the bass?